We need to lead rather than just observe a problem unresolved. Leading consistently means that we are leading well every day, in every moment, with every partner. As soon as ego gets too big, companies are not on a good path anymore, and oftentimes people leave these companies, and the best ones leave first.
Hallo liebe Hörerinnen und hallo lieber Hörer, ganz herzlich willkommen zur heutigen Leitwolf Podcast Folge. Sie ist eine ganz besondere, weil es geht nicht nur um ein Thema, das mir sehr am Herzen liegt. Es geht um das Thema gutes Führen, wie sehr häufig hier im Leitwolf Podcast. Das liegt mir am Herzen, weil dieses Thema die Kraft hat, die Welt besser zu machen. Denn wenn wir uns alle jeden Tag selbst gut führen und unseren Chef oder unseren Kunden gut führen oder unsere Chefin gut führen, unsere Kundin zur Seite gut führen und unser Team gut führen und uns gleichzeitig immer gut geführt fühlen von unseren Leuten, von unserem Chef, von unseren Mitarbeitern, wenn unsere Rolle ist zu folgen, dann und nur dann kann richtig Großes entstehen. Erfolg im Beruf und Erfüllung im Leben. Das ist das, warum ich so begeistert bin, dass dieses Thema heute da ist. Und das Zweite ist, ich habe die Gelegenheit gehabt, in einer Keynote von 30 Minuten die drei größten Learnings meines Lebens zu teilen in Bezug auf meine Führungskrafterfahrung aus drei Karrieren. Ich habe 25 Jahre in der Corporate World gearbeitet, habe mal 6 geführt, habe mal 12.000 geführt, bin dann raus, habe 2 Startups gegründet, die beide funktionieren. Habe also gegründet oder co-gegründet, habe also aus sehr vielen verschiedenen Bereichen Erfahrungen gesammelt. Und die habe ich geteilt in der Keynote. Und zwar in einem besonderen Moment. Vielleicht, wenn du regelmäßig hier reinhörst, hast du die Folge gehört, die die Aufzeichnung eines besonderen Fireside-Chats war mit 2 ganz tollen Menschen, mit David Taylor, mein langjähriger Vorgesetzter und mein längster Chef, ehemaliger CEO von Procter & Gamble weltweit, und mit Daniel Dippold, ja, 30 Jahre jung, Gründer und CEO von Evor, mein Co-Founder auf unserer KI-Firma. Und diese beiden Menschen aus 2 völlig verschiedenen Generationen und Welten haben dort mit mir gemeinsam eine Dreiviertelstunde über gutes Führen gesprochen, das Führen der Zukunft. Und das war faszinierend und wir haben tolle Reaktionen von euch bekommen, weshalb wir gesagt haben, weißt du was, wir machen jetzt mal sowas Ähnliches nochmal, weil diese Folge bei euch so gut angekommen ist und ihr euch mehr Inhalte dieser Art gewünscht habt. Deswegen teile ich heute mit euch meine Keynote, die ich auf derselben Großveranstaltung vor ungefähr 500 Executives teilen durfte und halten durfte. Der Titel war Leading with Impact, Pitfalls and Tips. Ja, also Führen mit Wirkung, Fallstricke und Tipps. Und in dieser Keynote habe ich gerne meine 3 größten Führungsfehler meiner Karriere geteilt. Ein kleiner Appetithappen vorweg. Hier sind die 3. Erstens, das schwarze Loch der Annahmen. Das begegnet mir immer wieder. Zweitens, inkonsistente Selbstreflexion. Ich habe es meistens gemacht und manchmal nicht. Und das war nicht gut. Und drittens, der von mir vollkommen unterschätzte Wert von Beziehungen am Arbeitsplatz und raus aus der Firma. Hör mal gleich rein. Ich bin gespannt, wie du das Ganze siehst, wie du das wahrnimmst. Weil ich überzeugt bin, dass diese Impulse vor allen Dingen zu diesen 3 Bereichen auch für unsere komplette Leitwolf-Community spannend und wertvoll sein können, teile ich diese Keynote jetzt mit dir. Bevor es damit aber losgeht, ein kurzer Hinweis, Information auch für dich, dass wir begonnen haben, die Leitwolf-Inhalte des Podcasts jetzt auch immer auf YouTube zu teilen, und zwar als Video. Solltest du also auch mal eine Folge mit Video hören wollen, schau gerne rein bei YouTube, abonnier dort meinen Kanal. Wir sind begeistert, wie schnell dort der Traffic hochgegangen ist und wir würden uns freuen, wenn du uns auch auf diesem Kanal begleitest. Und jetzt, ohne weitere Vorrede, viel Freude, viel Inspiration mit dieser ganz besonderen Live-Aufzeichnung eines besonderen Moments, meiner Keynote in Berlin. Viel Spaß!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. My name is Stefan. And I am a leadership catalyst. Why leadership? Leadership, because in every single role in my life, as a father of two wonderful young men, as a husband to a wonderful wife, Tanya, sitting over there, and as a rookie, as a captain in competitive sports teams, and as a young intern, manager, and leader in three different careers, I've learned time and time again, only when I'm leading myself well, when I'm leading my boss well, when I'm leading my peers well, and when I'm leading my team well, and when I feel well led by everyone around me, when my role is to follow rather than to lead, then and only then I can have success in business and a really fulfilled life. And Catalyst, yes, we have a bit of experience. And with my company right now, we've done about 800 projects with about 11,000 leaders like you. So we have experience. But not only are Gerlinde and others and me bringing tools and tips, I think our primary role is to unleash. To unleash good leadership from people, from teams, in order to multiply the value of entire companies. That's why Catalyst. So leadership, catalyst. And while it's quite common for many companies to share best practices, and I think it's right, because best practices and good principles should travel, I think it's at least as powerful to learn from mistakes. And I'm not shy from sharing the three biggest ones that I've made myself throughout my career so far. Let's just open them and go a bit more in depth a little bit later on. These are the three biggest mistakes I've been making as a leader. The first one is called the black hole of assumptions. So I'm human, so I'm making assumptions all the time. And I realize that quite a number of those assumptions turn out to be wrong later on, and some quite miserably wrong. The second mistake I have made is that while some people who know me well say I'm a curious, good learner, and there is probably some truth to it, honest to myself, I've at times been a little inconsistent in self-reflecting tough truths. So inconsistent self-reflection is a second mistake that I have tended to make. And my third one is that I underestimated the power of relationships. I had 18 years in P&G, and in P&G I somehow thought, well, things are going nicely, the career is growing well, surrounded by top talent. Why ever network outside P&G? Why ever make relationships beyond P&G? And I think in hindsight, that's another one that I should have done different earlier. Now, this whole thing started with one single question. I was a brand manager running my first two brands. I had six wonderful people reporting into me who were my peers before and then my direct team. And I realized that there is more to leading than just leading brands. I don't know how you felt, but when I joined P&G, I think I was there to learn how to lead brands. And that's true. And that's right. But it's incomplete. Because P&G, I think, is about two strong legs. It's about brands and it's about people. These two, to me, are the strongest legs that P&G is built upon. And one single question unleashed my awareness that there is people to lead and that there is leadership that goes far beyond leading brands. And that one question happened in the following moment. Brand manager on Vizier, used to writing one-page documents and making a strategic recommendation to my boss at the time. So I had put on one page, what do I think my brand Vizier should stand for in the minds and hearts of consumers 5 years down the road? And I recommended option B with full-hearted conviction. And then my boss at the time took the document, read it carefully, circled one argument, the key argument, and came back to me asking one single question. Stefan, are you aware of the impact you're going to have with that strategy on your market share in your own biggest retail customer? And I turned pale and I turned silent because I had no clue at all. Not only did I not know the impact it would have, even worse, I didn't even know who my biggest retail customer was at the time, as embarrassing as it was. So what happened? I put my recommendation down. I ran over to the Edeka team, which I then learned was my biggest customer. And about 3 minutes later, I got a wonderful one-hour session from a gentleman who's here at the conference. His name is Elmar Götz, who in German you would say Druckbetankung, so pressure injection, right? He would quickly help me understand what sales is, what I need to do to make a brand work in our biggest retail customer, and that my idea number B was not really a good idea at all, right? So after that 1 hour, I went back a little smarter, very humbled, back to my boss, ripping my strategy in pieces and saying, look, Michael, I'm going to start all over. I understand now, not a good idea. And by the way, if you ever staff a marketing role in that Edeka customer team, that was the time in the middle of the 90s, maybe some of you remember, we started staffing multifunctional customer teams, right? The only team that doesn't have a marketing multifunctional yet is that Edeka team. Michael, if you ever start considering staffing that, this is an application. I want that role, right? And a few months later, that's what happened. The role was staffed. I got the role. I got to learn sales for 2 years, which helped me a lot, also for what I'm sharing with you today. And I'd like to say a big thank you to that man who may be in the room right now, Michael Bernhörster. I saw you walk in. There he is, Michael Bernhörster. You started it all with that one question. You made me suddenly realize there is more to lead in P&G than only brands. It's about leading people. So I'm grateful for your question you asked at the time. Thank you, Michael. And that really also started my lifelong learning. Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.
My lifelong learning as a leader, which is the reason why this letter is here. You may wonder why on earth does he bring a letter in a keynote on leadership? Well, there is a simple reason. In my view, in my perspective, you can describe learning leadership with the help of a five stairs ladder. My ladder starts like this. First, I need to think about leadership. What is it at all? Michael, you made me start thinking. I kept on thinking ever since, and my definition of good leadership is evolving. It was very wide in the beginning. It's getting more and more concentrated to the essence. And I think it's at the beginning when you start leading that at least then we should think. But I think we should also think whenever things change. If they change around us, and if they change in our career. When Michael helped me go into sales, the way I was leading had to change drastically. So step number one of the ladder of leadership mastery is thinking about leadership. Then comes step number two, and we didn't rehearse it, but David Taylor said it this morning here on the stage. Step two is actually doing it. We need to act. Yeah? We need to lead rather than just observe a problem unresolved. One of the things that drive me crazy is problem admiration. When people admire a problem and they keep on admiring it. Has every one of you, any one of you ever seen people admire problems? Hands up. Almost every hand goes up, right? I mean, if there is a problem, then we have two options. Either we become part of the problem, for example, by admiring it, or we become part of the solution by helping others solve the problem. Right? So that's the moment when we start acting, when we actually start leading. The third level of leadership mastery to me is leading well. Starting to do it well. Starting to help others do the right thing. Right? That's step three. And I think many people in many situations reach this level. But there is more. And as boring as it may sound, I think it's important. Step four of that ladder is consistency. I loved to hear this in Leah's presentation about parenthood just a few minutes ago. Consistency. Now we have kids, and I know how important consistency is with our children. And it's the same in leadership and business. Leading consistently means that we are leading well every day, in every moment, with every partner. Yeah? So that's leading consistently well, to me, level 4. But the ultimate in good leadership is to get to level 5. And that is to lead consistently well, even under pressure. When you know it's tough to take the right decision, when you know there is scarcity of resources, when you know that expectations are higher than you think you can achieve, that's pressure, right? And level 5 is that you still lead consistently well, even under pressure. That's why my ladder of leadership mastery has those 5 stairs, and I will remain a lifelong learner on how to do that. The ladder of leadership mastery. Thank you. Let's talk about the essence of bad and good leadership. And what I'd like you to do now is join me in a simple exercise. It seems simple. In fact, I find it quite demanding, and I asked David this morning, unrehearsed and on the spot, do it in one word. And I'd like you to do the same. If you could please, you're all experienced leaders, whatever walks of life you're in. If you could please summarize in one word each, one word each. What's the essence of good leadership for you? And what's the essence of bad leadership for you? Please pick one word. Now, turn to your neighbor, wherever they sit. Exchange that one word, please. Whatever you've just exchanged with your partner will be very legitimate and very valid. And I just invite you to keep on asking this question from time to time. Because at least 2 things have been changing in my life. One thing that changed in my life is me. I'm a different version of myself now at the time when Michael asked this powerful question to me. And the second thing that's changing is the world around us, right? And I think both the world around us as changing and me as changing requires us at times to reflect about the simple question. Is it still the same thing that's the essence of bad and good? And I was thrilled when David this morning, unprompted, talked about egocentricity and selfishness as his essence of bad. Because I think we need to be clear, we should be clear on what the essence means to us. And here is my essence. The essence of good and bad leadership to me, also for me, the essence of bad leadership is egocentricity. I've had 16 different bosses throughout my career, and I've seen many other leaders, worked with 11,000, hundreds of CEOs. And the one pattern that I see recognizing is egocentricity. As soon as ego gets too big, companies are not on a good path anymore, and oftentimes people leave these companies, and the best ones leave first. And on the other hand, I think the best reduction of leadership into 2 words that I'm able to articulate is a combination of 2 seemingly contradictory words. It's on the one hand side, enormous willpower, like you've seen in these men this morning, both Daniel and David. They both have the willpower to get the right thing done. The distinguishing factor, though, is that at the same time, really strong leaders also have sheer endless personal humility, and with everything they say and do, clarify that it's not about them, but it's about the greater good. It's about the purpose of the company, it's about the team, and it's about helping the others grow. So that's my best essence I can articulate. And it's not only backed by my experience, it's also backed by a great book. I've read a couple of really inspiring books. Who of you has read the book Good to Great by Jim Collins? Wow, many hands go up, so you know it, right? And it's one of the books I've read twice because I enjoyed it so much. Yeah? It started with a question. The question was, has there ever been a company that turned from good to great? Good defined as 7% annual growth, and great defined as 5 times that growth. So moving from 7 to at least 35% annual growth and sustaining that growth over 15 years or more. Quite dramatic change. And at the beginning of when I started reading the book, well, I'm not sure that any company would ever get there, right? But the answer was yes, out of 1,440 companies studied in the US, 10 years of consulting time went into it. They found 11 companies that did move from good to great. One of them, a company is called Abbott, is our client, so we can look a bit inside. And the next question obviously was, if that is the case, what distinguishes those 11 that turned from good to great from those 1,430 that stayed on good? It's 8 different factors. The first and the strongest one is exactly this, and it's the kind of leadership particularly applied by the CEO and the C-suite at the time just before and just after the turn from good to great. And when they peeled the onion more, they found out it's that. It's this combination of willpower and endless personal humility. So this is my essence in 2 words. Now, this book and many other moments I had, particularly also here in P&G, got us going, my business team and me, and my cooperation partners, on a very simple vision. My company's vision is to create a well-led world. Punto. Why? Because in a well-led world, nobody would be stupid enough anymore to start a war. In a well-led world, we wouldn't have 10,000 kids dying anymore from hunger every single day. And while here, what I can do is just contribute a bit and support in donations, there is another world, which is our business world, which, if it was already consistently well-led, there would be more and more people on more and more days going to work with a smile on their face and coming back home from work with an even bigger smile on their face. And that is the reason why we are so inspired by this vision, as are more and more of our clients. Now let's dig a little bit into what I believe are the 3 biggest leadership mistakes I've done, particularly post leaving P&G. And I've run 3 different careers. My first, 18 years in P&G, started as an intern in marketing on Meister Popper, left as a managing director, running healthcare, running pharmaceuticals in 3 countries with about 650 people in the organization. My second career was corporate outside P&G. And I was lucky that I joined T-Mobile Germany, a much bigger business, much faster business. I was a general manager and chief marketing officer at the time. And the hottest thing I was able to learn there was in working together with Apple, also working together with Steve Jobs for about a year on and off, virtually via email and also live one day here in Berlin. Because Apple had decided after iPhone number 1 started to be a success in California and in the US, we will take this into Germany as second country. Let's go back into that time for a moment. Remember early 2007. Who of you was using either a Nokia phone or a BlackBerry? Hands up. Haha, many hands. I admit I was a BlackBerry fan at the time, still pressing buttons, right? And at the time when I was the chief marketing officer, I always ran 3 devices at once, 3 phones. One, Nokia, because it was the dominating market leader. More than half of the global volume was Nokia. 2, I used my BlackBerry, because I still loved it. And 3, I used the most innovative product, which in these old days often was Sony Ericsson's. Who used a Sony Ericsson? Some did. Then my boss comes in and says, Stefan, we won the bid, meaning we got the exclusive right to sell iPhone number 1 into the German market alone without competitors for 2 years. Here is one of 3 prototypes, and you make sure that the whole thing works, okay? Good, no pressure. It took me 1 morning, 1 night, and 1 evening to fall in love. Because Apple, I liked the company a lot, I wouldn't agree with everything they do. But in that one day, I realized it's an amazing new thing to use these applications rather than pressing my well-beloved buttons on Blackberries. And quite fast, it became obvious that this would change the category. So that was my second big corporate experience, my first one post P&G. And while I loved many things there, I had one big surprise. We were 7,500 people, 8 billion euros in sales. It's a big machine that's pretty fast. 310 people in my marketing department. And I assumed going in that we would all have a similar understanding of what a brand stands for, what a brand is, right? I bet if one of you now took your phone and you called our laundry plant manager in Manila and you would ask her or him, what is a brand? You would probably get something back that pretty much corresponds to what you think a brand is. 1 month after having joined P&G and leading marketing, I realized, gosh, I have 310 people in my team, but there is 311 different views of what a brand actually is. So that was one of my biggest mistakes, to assume that the same cohesion of a brand concept is known outside P&G. At least at that time in that company, it was not. So the black hole of assumption is my first and biggest mistake. My second one is inconsistent self-reflection. And I've been pretty consistent oftentimes, but not always. And I would like to share with you an experience. It's not a story, because it always sounds like made up. This is real, what I'm going to share now. A real experience, how knowing someone else's trigger, playing to someone else's trigger, unleashed a self-reflection that changed the history of an entire nation. And it comes from the world of rugby. My younger son, Tom, 19, started playing rugby at the age of 8. Ever since, I'm a rugby dad on weekends and love watching that sport. Our club, quite successful, often manages to attract very strong, inspiring speakers when we have our Christmas parties. And so it did about 6 years ago, attracting a man named Ben Ryan. Ben Ryan is an Englishman who had been professional, who had coached the U19 national team in England, then went on to coach the U23 national team in England, and then in 2013, 3 years before the Olympics in Rio, gets a phone call. Hey Ben, this is the Fiji Islands. We'd like to invite you to become our national coach. Your mission? Bring us to Rio de Janeiro and qualify us. He accepted, moved his family to Fiji and started. He started seeing his 40 players, all of them great, funny guys with a lot of humor, but not a lot of discipline. So the first practice starts, and about 10 minutes into it, one of his players comes and says, hey coach, great session, but I really asked to be excused because it's my mom's birthday and she has baked such a wonderful cake. So I have to go to have that cake, right? Off he goes, but I'm back tomorrow for practice. So that's the discipline he found. And then he realized, I gotta change something. He spotted all his players and then found one player who he saw has awesome raw talent, but two big problems. Problem number one was his weight. He weighed 162 kilograms, which even for a rugby player is a bit too much. Problem two, resulting from problem one, speed. He needed more than 20 seconds to run 100 meters. I think if we now went out and warmed up for 15 minutes, we would probably all run a bit faster than that. And then he started trying to figure out, how can I make him self-reflect? How can I make him want to change? And he started leading with his ears, listening to him. And one day he finds the trigger. And the next day he says, Ralf, come here, I have a question for you. Yesterday, I heard you talk about your son and the fact that until he was 8, he just hated math. He was worst in class. He just didn't like it at all, right? Mm-hmm. But about a year ago, he got a new teacher and the whole thing got turned upside down. And now he's best in class in math, and he adores his math teacher, right? Yes, he does. Ralf, question. Wouldn't it be great if your son adored you as a rugby player as much as he adores his math teacher? Strike. Ralf started crying, and Ben just let him cry for about a minute. And then went on to say, look, Ralf, if you really want that so much, it's very easy. You just gotta do two things. Change your diet. Here is your new diet. That's what you're going to eat starting now. And second, speed on 100 meters doesn't really start with the last 10. It starts with the first 10. So what I'd like you to do now every single day is please practice 10 sprints of 10 meters each. That's all you do. 6 months later, Ralf has lost 34 kilograms down to 128. Speed 14 and a half on 100. He becomes the captain of the Fiji Islands team. They qualify for Rio. They reach the semifinal. Important to note, in 120 years of Olympic history, the Fiji Islands had never won any medal on anything. Nothing. And now they are in the semifinal of a team sport, which means you already won your bronze medal, the first medal in the history of the nation. They go on to win the semifinal, going to the final. Who do they play? England. On the other side, two-thirds of the players trained by Ben Ryan, because he groomed the youngsters to get into that Olympic final. And guess who wins the Olympic final? The Fiji Islands. And here is my pleasure to introduce you to Ben Ryan, the man with red hair up there, and Ralf, his captain. To me, one of the most impactful experiences I've made in my life, how when you just unleash the right self-reflection in another person, you can unleash something that's just enormously changing the history of an entire nation. So that's an experience around my second biggest learning, my second big mistake. I think my third one comes from underestimating the power of personal relationships. My profile tends that way. My experience in P&G somehow implicitly seemed to confirm it. This is a great company. Things are moving. Career is going nice. Why should I do networking outside P&G? Very wrong. I just underestimated the power of human relationships. And in order to illustrate this now, I'd like one of you to just help me with a very simple trick. Maybe Chris, you help me. If you could just give me your right hand, what am I doing now?
Pushing.
And what are you doing?
Pushing.
Exactly. Counter. Thank you very much, Chris Wilhelmsson. Thank you. What this simple thing illustrates is a very simple human truth, I believe. Humans mirror human behavior. When I put pressure on Chris's hand, he puts pressure back. When I radiate stress, sorry? Yes, true. Well, you would have won it had you gone all in, Chris. I know you. If you send stress, what you get back is stress. If you want calm, you need to radiate calm. And up until a moment in 2018, I thought this is only true for humans. But I then learned in a really impressive moment that it goes far beyond that. Maybe some of you are guests in our Lightwolf podcast. Well, we named all our leadership programs Lightwolf, which is the German word for leader of the pack. And many people know that wolves are strong, but that's not the reason why we picked that symbol. The reason is a different one, because about 2018, I ran a program with 12 top leaders of a 7,000 people company in northern Germany. And I knew that there was an enclosure with three young wolves, 3 years old, all having grown up in the wild. And this enclosure was 2 by 2 kilometers long, so they had a lot of space. I went there to observe these animals for about an hour. And after that hour, I asked the lady, Mrs. Ascani, "Miss Ascani, do you think I can go into this cage?" And she replied, "Herr Hohmeister, with some others, I would never ever let them in. I've had people here who come here and rattle the cage. Yeah, come on over, wolves. Let's have a chat, right?" So they were sending stress. Never would I let these people into this enclosure. But we've had phone calls before, and we've had this 1 hour together. So, Herr Hohmeister, if you think you're courageous enough to go in, then go in. She opened the cage, I went inside, and I sat down on a wooden bench. Because intuitively, I didn't want to dominate those animals. Three young wolves that grew up in the wild. The first one, about 10 meters away, comes around, looks at me, finds me completely boring. He turns away. The second one, slightly differently, gets to about this distance, like 20 centimeters from my hand, starts sniffing, looks at me as to say, yeah, I've tried it, but you're boring, and goes off as well. But the third one, and that's why I put the position here, the third one, just a bit higher, on eye level, was as far as he is right now, about 1 meter away from me. And I just decided I'm not going to say anything, I'm not going to do anything, you are going to take all decisions. Blood pressure, Stefan Hohmeister, in that moment, probably 200. Pulse, north of 200. Because I was stressed. Because I not always, not often, show my face to wolves that grew up in the wild. But I also knew about these animals that he is stressed as well, because he knows that humans can be dangerous to wolves. So all I said was just keep silent, Stefan, and let him take all decisions. 2 minutes of eye contact, feeling like 2 days. And after those 2 minutes, I got rewarding with something absolutely magic. Because after those 2 minutes, and we had both calmed down, he lowers his ears, he lowers his head, he comes forward right in between my legs, he comes up and licks square through my face, which in the land of wolves is the kiss of a wolf and the signal of adoption, right? You're okay, you're part of this family right now. And I'm grateful that this moment happened. Unfortunately, I didn't see it come, so I have no video, I have no photo, but I have such a strong memory that I will take with me forever. And it just taught me that not only humans mirror human behavior, but so do wolves. That's why these animals are our symbol for leadership. They know what diversity is, they know what leadership is, and they know what care is. That's why we've chosen them as symbols. So this is what's behind the concept. And if I can wrap it up, please don't repeat my mistakes. I think my three biggest mistakes have been and continue to be, but I tried to make them smaller. It's the black hole of assumptions, it's selective self-reflection, and it's underestimating the power of human relationships. And if you are an investor, if you are a board member, a CEO, a C-level, or anyone else having leadership responsibility, I would like to invite you to request or to ensure that in the companies that you are responsible for, there is good leadership being defined in one sentence, in just one model, in a few principles. Ensure it's defined. Ensure it gets measured and rewarded. Because like Peter Drucker said, you get what you measure. If you want better leadership in your company, you need to measure it. Ensure that strong leadership systems are in place and that you actively use them so that a strong pipeline of leaders with impact is created in the companies that you are responsible for. So that's my plea to you. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've received at least one little idea to rethink or to advance your thinking on how to lead with impact. And with that, I'd like to turn it back to Katrin. Thank you very much.
Ja, das war's auch schon mit meiner Keynote aus Berlin. Ich würde mich sehr freuen, wenn du mit mir dein größtes Learning daraus jetzt gerne mal direkt hier bei Spotify oder deinem anderen Kanal in den Kommentaren teilen würdest. Gerne hier auf Spotify, wenn das dein bevorzugter Kanal ist. Und wenn du mich wissen lassen würdest, was in dieser Folge dir ganz besonders gut gefallen hat und wo du vielleicht weiterführende Fragen hast. Dieses Thema ist nämlich eins, das hört nie auf, denn Leadership ist lebenslanges Lernen. Danke, dass du dabei warst. Wir hören uns nächste Woche. Bis dann. Danke fürs Zuhören.